The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. Also watching us on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301 and on the PCTV Select app. Happy to have you here this morning. It is Thursday, November 13th. We're live and local here in our WTBR studio out on Federico Drive, and happy to have you along for the show as well. Got a great show coming up today. We have Mr. Peter Stasiowski. He is the Director of Communications for Interprint, Inc., and we're going to be talking about a big anniversary that Interprint has, 40 years in business. And we're going to be talking about a little bit of the history of the company and what it means to the Berkshire County economy and lots of other things, kind of doing a deep dive into what makes Interprint tick. It's going to be a good show. So stick around. We'll do that in just a moment. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today from the National Weather Service. Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers. Near steady temperature in the upper 30s. Temperature falling into the upper 30s this afternoon. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 50%. Tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Cold with lows in the mid-20s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 30s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Now we're starting to hear those wintry forecasts now, and we certainly got a taste of winter, didn't we, on Veterans Day. Quite a bit more snow, I think, than a lot of people were expecting, and the temperatures were much colder, and didn't take much, certainly up over the Mall Road. That got closed down with some vehicles off the road and things like that. The funny thing about the Mall Road is just enough of an elevation increase when you go up and over that road that at the top it can be a completely different weather system up there than it is at the bottom. So it could be raining at the bottom and it could be snowing and freezing at the top. It's one of those things. But, you know, we're in the elevated area here for sure. So that is just the opening salvo for winter, I think. That's for winter 25-26. All right. Before we get started with our show, I just want to announce that 89.7 WTBR-FM is proud to announce our 7th annual one-day on-air fundraiser. The event will take place on Thursday, November 20th from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. So don't miss our guests, including local dignitaries and your friends and neighbors from the community. There will be plenty of incentives you can win, including restaurant gift certificates, tickets to local cultural attractions, and much more. And, you know, it's about a week away. It's 1 week from today that's happening, the 20th of November. But right now, you can make your donation to the Rock Box at WTBRFM.com. So that is open right now. You can donate ahead of time of that big one-day fundraiser that we do. And every donation will be considered, of course, for the drawings. We very much appreciate all of them. So don't miss the 7th annual one-day on-air fundraiser. Thursday, November 20th, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m., only right here on 89.7 WTBR-FM and all day live on the WTBR-FM Facebook page. Thank you for your support. All right, and I'm going to charge up my voice for that and get all ready for next week and try not to use it all up today. But I have a great guest here today. We have Peter Stasiowski from Interprint, Inc. Good morning, Peter. How are you today?
Pretty good, Sean. Thanks for having me, and really looking forward to another Berkshire weather winter.
Well, you know, I think we're just cut of a different cloth around here. You just if you're going to stick around here through the winter, you're just going to deal with it. And we all have our coping mechanisms, right? We know how to get this done.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're communications director at Interprint Inc. How long have you been there?
19 years and 1 week.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. It's gone quickly, and it's, you know, I've been very thankful to have such a great team there at Interprint to support my career and to support our customers for sure.
Yeah. Yep. So obviously a major employer, manufacturing base here in the Berkshires, and why we wanted to have you on the show to talk about the 40th anniversary of the company. So that's 40 years in business, in a business that I'm sure a lot of people probably wrote off in some ways to say, well, that's, you know, the way that industry worked in the Berkshires for 100 years, 150 years, but, you know, we're going to be looking at different things. And Interprint kind of flipped the script on that.
Yeah, it was a need that in North America, there really wasn't a significant printer of these materials that we print now. So our founder, Bill Hines Sr., was working for Mead, actually, in South Lee, and tried to get an investment project going with them. They balked at the idea, and so he thought strongly enough about the need for printed decor paper in North America that he went to the Interprint Group in Germany and eventually forged an agreement to start selling German printed papers into North America. Actually, the first Interprint was in Lenox as a sales office.
Oh, wow.
For a short period of time. Hmm. So that's really where it began, was Bill Hines Sr.'s recognition that there was a need in North America for North American design and North American printed decor paper.
Hmm. And we'll get into what those products are, because we say printed decor paper. You may not realize that all the places that this product ends up. And you think of paper, but you don't think of the end result product. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. First, let's because of the 40th anniversary, you commissioned a documentary video, a short documentary video about the company, right?
That's right. Actually, it wasn't so commissioned as it was an internal project. So we thought at the beginning of the year, wouldn't it be great to, in this day and age of video everywhere on your phone and everywhere else, to actually somehow chronicle 40 years of growth with Interprint. And we went way back into the archives. We're talking VHS tapes. We're talking flat print photography prints. And we took all that stuff and, you know, essentially laid it out on the table and decided, you know, what are we going to do with this?
So I'd like to play a little bit of that video for both our TV and our radio listeners here this morning, if I can. And it's pretty descriptive, so even for the radio audience, you'll kind of get an idea of what's going on. We'll play just a little clip of that right now. So here it is, the Interprint 40th documentary. Here we go.
I'm Bill Hines Sr., retired founder and CEO, president of Interprint Inc. In 1984, I had a very successful and comfortable career with Mead specialty paper. We couldn't compete with the Japanese printers who were shipping in pretty nice, high fidelity, really creative designs. So I put together a plan, put in two new state-of-the-art printing presses so that we could compete in the market. Well, we took that to corporate headquarters, and it got shot down. To me, that put the writing on the wall for me, that we couldn't survive the way we were. I discovered that Interprint Germany was looking to sell over into the North American market. So I contacted them. I presented my plan, which is basically a modification of my plan that I had for Mead to do something here in North America. Then in September, I was called and said, come on over and be ready to sign something. So I said, okay, I'll be there. So that was in 85. I started selling printed papers from Interprint Germany. Then in 1989, we decided that we had enough volume that we could justify starting our own production plant.
So that's pretty cool. That is, and again, just the first few minutes of that documentary.
Yeah.
What did it take to put that together? Because there's a lot of archival footage and stuff like that.
Well, you know, I was just looking at it again for the thousandth time, and I was just remarking how many of those people from those early clips are actually still working at Interprint.
Wow.
It's amazing to see your colleagues that, you know, have been there 30, 35 years, and what it took to put together the video is really you got to start with a thesis. You got to start with what's the whole purpose here? What's the takeaway when it's finished? And once we got that solidified, we sort of worked back from there and decided to see, okay, now what do we have for content that fits that thesis? And you know, we're new at this too. You know, we're printers, not video magicians. So you know, thankfully we've got some resources to. A small studio in the stationery factory to help with that. Mm. And we had a lot of cooperation from some colleagues, both active and retired, as you saw or heard in the clip just now. And we put it all together. And my new colleague, I'll embarrass him, Dave Jakacki Jr., a graduate of the University of Maine, Orono. He took his degree and put it to the ultimate test, which is to make a 6-minute video for his new company.
Yeah. And, you know, I think multimedia and things like that are important for every company to tell their story in some way, too, right? I mean, it isn't just you do what you have to do and make the sales, but there's all the other stuff that the interaction with local people and with employees, right, and with other businesses and everything like that. So there's all kinds of needs for that these days.
Yeah, I mean, we're part of the community. We're part of a number of communities, you know, first and foremost to our customers in North America and our suppliers throughout North America and into Europe, but certainly our local Berkshire community that provides us with the folks that we need to get our products produced every day. Mm-hmm. And you know, as I mentioned, many of them have been there. I'm still the new guy in my group. I'm 19 years. I'm the new guy still. Let's put it that way. Yeah,
that's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Think about that. That's but that is a lot of longevity there, and
right.
that usually speaks to a very healthy company in some ways.
Absolutely.
Right? So, at the time of sort of Bill Hines determining that this was going to be something he could do, you know, and move forward with, what were the market needs at the time, and the main product that they do, that they did at the time? What did he see as you know, an opportunity there?
Yeah, well, first of all, the main product, at least the traditional product of Interprint back in the 80s, and we still print it today, is called decor paper.
Hmm.
Basically, this is an image of a natural material such as stone or wood, which is scanned and then printed on one of our printing presses here in Pittsfield, as the image of the surface of the stone or the wood. So you're talking about, you know, like a granite look or a wood grain print. That paper is then laminated onto the surface of an engineered board. Mm. So when you think of engineered board versus solid wood, solid wood, you know what that is? Engineered board is all the other pieces of the tree that they can't use, ground up into particle board or MTF.
Mm.
Great for the environment, but doesn't look so good, and you can't really clean it. So it needs a surface that it allows it to be cleaned and allows it to be appealing in the manufacturing of cabinets, of furniture, of flooring.
Mm-hmm. Countertops.
Countertops. If you've got a kitchen cabinet and it looks like wood, it's either A, solid wood, or B, made to look like solid wood. Mm-hmm. And if it's made to look like solid wood, chances are it's an Interprint product.
Hmm. And flooring, you mentioned too, that is, I think, seemingly a growing component of, you know, when people thought about what was on the floor. For many years, it was probably either hardwood. yep. or it was linoleum, right? But is that an engineered product as well, or is it now more sort of the boards that are made to look like wood but aren't?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. So there's a number of different options for folks that are looking to replace that old floor. And for the engineered products, there's laminate flooring, which is kind of a more traditional product using a paper laminate, which has a wear layer on top, or like a resilient flooring. So SPC, LVT, if you go into any home improvement store, you'll be faced with a huge decision process. But our products are all around; they're just not labeled as such.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know by going into a store and saying, "I want an Interprint product," right?
Right.
You're
right.
Not going to find that.
No, you'd end up buying from one of our customers, hopefully.
Yeah. And we were just chatting before we got on air about those products and how they make their way, back and forth across borders, and that they're, here certainly in the Berkshires, it's a very important part of this local economy to have Interprint here. Tell us how many people are employed at Interprint.
We got 185 folks showing up, and around the clock. We run three shifts at our operations off of Route 41, Central Berkshire Boulevard. Right now, 5 days a week. When we're super busy, it's 7 days a week.
Wow.
And it really depends on the amount of orders we get from our customers. Mm-hmm. There's, as you mentioned, there's some interesting things going on internationally with tariffs and the economy, and we're working through a lot of that right now.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's a product that at least starts here, but then goes somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
Or it comes from somewhere else to start here and then go somewhere else.
Right. So the paper that we print on here at Interprint in Pittsfield is a lot of it is actually sourced from Canada. So it comes on the back of a truck into Pittsfield, gets dropped off, we print on it, and then a lot of times many of our customers for that printed product are in Canada. So it goes back to Canada. And then those companies will then fabricate our paper onto their boards for the manufacture of other things like cabinets and furniture, and then that will get back on a truck and come back in the United States. So when you think about tariffs, we're kind of getting hit in double, both on the raw material side, and also our customers are getting hit. So and it's not so much, I mean, there's always been tariffs. I mean, it's not so much that, but it's really the volatility of the tariffs, I'll say. One week they're this way, and next week they're not this way. And but we're managing as well as we can. We're working with our suppliers and our customers. We're all in it together, so to speak, and making as well as we can.
Well, that's the thing. There's real people involved with that too, right? There's 185 people out on Route 41 that depend on, the slight machinations one way or another, whether a tariff goes up or down or whatever, how it affects the demand for the products, things like that. Those are all things I'm sure that nobody likes volatility like that, right?
It's
predictability is what business is like.
Yeah, we're sort of tooled for both. We want to make sure that our first of all, it's very important that our product is consistent. Sometimes our print run will begin, and then 18 hours later, it'll wind up. And that first meter of paper or film has to look exactly like that last meter. So consistency is an important part of our production process, and having a consistent team on hand that's experienced to actually print this product is super important, too. Like, we want to have consistency in our product, and you can only get that really from a consistency in your company.
There's also a creative process there, too, right, in the designs of the print, because it's not just bring the paper in, print it, and ship it out. There's other stuff going on.
100%. I always like to say it's not that we print, it's what we print is actually makes us the leader in our market. You can put, and you can look around and find plenty of awful looking 1970s laminates lying around, and the reason why they're still lying around is because the product is really durable. But unfortunately, back then they weren't really as concerned about the image fidelity and the appropriateness of the image and the faithfulness to the natural material. So these days, that is all that matters, really. We've got a material studio off of West Housatonic Street in Pittsfield basically a wood shop materials studio where we buy and bring in the world's finest samples of materials, and then are able to finish them in advance of being scanned and then printed. So we start with a real McCoy, are able to make it look exactly like we want it to, and then working with our customers, fine-tune that and print it for them.
So you're basically taking real materials and scanning or photographing them, and then using that as part of the image that gets printed and then laminated into the product.
Exactly. Every laminate product, every print that we create has a beginning with Mother Nature.
And I'll just remind people, we're talking with Peter Stasiowski this morning. He's the Director of Communications at Interprint Inc., I'll say that right, and obviously a major manufacturer here in Berkshire County, right here in Pittsfield, right on our Route 41. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. Let's talk about sort of those early days, as we mentioned in the video with Bill Hines. A lot of people will remember the operation on Pex Road in Pittsfield for a while.
Yeah.
And that was using a very old mill. And so sort of there's some connection there with the Berkshire County industrial history, if you will, paper mills, printing, things like that. So that was a good fit in a lot of ways for those years until you just couldn't fit in there anymore, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, Berkshire County has got a very rich and deep and long history in manufacturing, and a lot of it is tied to the Housatonic River. A lot of companies started on the banks of Housatonic River. I mean, that was a source of power, a source of ways of getting, unfortunately, rid of your waste back then. But, you know, Crane and Company started there. Plenty of other companies up and down the county, you know, benefited from that. And we feel like Interprint in some ways have benefited from that legacy of families understanding that manufacturing is not a dirty word. Mm-hmm. It's a source of steady income. It's a source of growth within a company. When employees show loyalty, the company shows loyalty back to them. So we sort of came and stepped into that that story, you know, back in the mid-80s. And so we were pretty successful from the beginning because there was that built-in, I'll say, work ethic here in the Berkshires, folks that are willing to roll up their sleeves for a good and stable career.
And, you know, it's a technical career as well. And you need a trained workforce. You need people who have some skills going in. I would imagine there's probably a lot of skills you can train on the job as well. But that's one of the things I'm sure at the time in the 80s that the Pittsfield population had on its side in the good column was, hey, we've got great people here that can easily move over from whatever job they were doing to do this and to train up quickly and to produce a very high quality product, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, our the way that we print requires both the mechanical knowledge and some creativity, and our printing machines are essentially the size of a small ranch home, each one of them. So they're, you know, they're tall, they're long. And they've got a lot of buttons.
I was going to say complex.
Complex.
A lot of moving parts,
yeah.
Literally.
Moving parts,
moving parts,
right. And so the print technicians and the printers themselves, they have to understand how the machine works. But also, it's really important that our product is consistent, so they have to understand how to fine-tune what they're doing to get the color to come out right, you know. It's so important to our customers that there's consistency in the color and the print, because you never know when, you know, a carpenter is going to take the left side cabinet door from the top of the pile and the right side cabinet door from the bottom of the pile. And so you know you may not know as a printer printing, because that was 14 hours ago, but but the family that has new kitchen cabinets is certainly going to know if the left side of the cabinet does not match the right side of the cabinet. So it's really important for consistency's sake.
Yeah. And then all of those materials also need to be sourced in, right? All the dyes and the paints and the things that go into the print process.
Yep.
That's another whole area of it.
Right. You know, the components are essentially paper or thermoplastic film we're printing on now, and inks. And the inks have to stick to the film, they have to stick to the paper, and they have to dry on there very well and accurately. And it's a lot of very fine tuning that goes on in our process. It's a huge machine, but the devil's really in the details.
Yeah. And what are the advantages of moving from the paper, which was sort of sounds like it was the traditional medium that you printed on, right? The traditional product over to this thermofilm, I think.
Yeah, thermoplastic films are becoming very popular in our market. Just another option, really, for products. We started down this road, I'm going to say, in 2011 or so, working with a company out of Canada. They wanted to have the print on some of their products, and they were interested in seeing about a way to avoid having it be a laminate and go through a separate process. They wanted to take a print right off of our presses, apply some glue to the back of it, and stick it onto furniture. Mm-hmm. And they asked us to try to take a paper machine and run some plastic film through it to see what happens.
Hmm.
And what happened is that the ovens that dry our paper made the film into taffy. So we learned a few lessons back then, and we've got a different drying system now when we're printing film.
And you're sort of talking about some growing pains there, too. And I know there was a time when we sort of talked about the PEX Road facility, and that's a pretty massive facility of its own. If you ever look at the sort of footprint of that, there's a lot of space in that facility. It moved on to other uses after Interprint moved out. But about 20 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, there was a decision to move to your current facility over on Route 41 for, I would imagine, expansion or just to be able to maybe use some new machines. What were the decision-making factors there?
Yeah, well, PEX Road is an awesome old factory. I mean, I think it dated back to Civil War uniform manufacturing. So that goes way back in, obviously, the 1800s. And so we started in there in 1987 with our first laboratory small-size printing press, started expanding to large production presses, and really we expanded the facility there on PEX Road a couple of times, but it really, just because of the age of it and I'll say the way that it's laid out, it really wasn't conducive to a modern operation. Mm-hmm. So back in, 1999, 2000, 2001, we started thinking about, well, what would be the second iteration of Interprint in Pittsfield, and acquired some land on Central Berkshire Boulevard, as you mentioned, and I think we broke ground in 2003 or 4 on the facility that we operate now there.
I remember that being a very big deal also to keep this company in Pittsfield, right? Because
100%, yep.
At that moment when you're starting to look and you're saying this facility no longer suits our needs or we want to grow or we can't because of, you know, the physical limitations or whatever, that's sort of a critical moment where a community has to step up and say, okay, what can we do to make sure that we can keep this business here in the city somewhere, right? Somewhere with, and it's not always easy finding an appropriate physical plant for a company in Pittsfield. You would think that there would be, but I'll just tell you, it's not all the time. It's hard.
Yeah, it was quite the decision. I wasn't with the company at the time, but I understand it was quite the decision of what to do, you know, to try to further expand at PEX Road, to try and find an existing plant or to build. And we decided that in manufacturing, you want to be as, to set up your operations as optimally as possible to reduce waste and downtime and things like that. So we thought that we tend to think long term, and over the long term, it was going to be ultimately in our benefit to build exactly what we wanted to build. And we had at that point, I'm going to say very close to 100 employees. Mm-hmm. And so their knowledge and their combined experience at that point is something we're not going to find in any other community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, either we tell them to, you know, all uproot their families, take their kids out of schools and move over to Timbuktu, wherever, or we look for some land here to build and do exactly what we want to do. We decided on the latter.
Yeah. good decision for Pittsfield, obviously good decision for Interprint, and this many years later, celebrating their 40th anniversary in business, and that's what we're talking about today here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM. Peter Stasiowski is my guest here this morning, and we're talking about that. We're actually coming up on our top of the hour break, so I think we're going to take that. We've got lots more to talk about, the many expansions that have happened at the plant since that build out, and I'm going to talk about again how difficult it can be to stay competitive, and what local and state governments can do to help companies be profitable and to be successful in their communities, because that's what we want to do. We want to keep companies here and doing what they do. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. We'll to the top of the hour break, and we will be back with Peter Stasiowski from Interprint Inc. here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'd be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is.
Plan your meals out in advance and shop for the week. This will deter you from spending more than you planned.
Pay yourself first. Think of your savings like a bill you pay monthly. This way you can be ready when life happens.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Hello, Phil Tierney here, the host of Berkshire Jazz, where I play all the young tigers and old lions of jazz every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 on WTBR 89.7, Pittsfield Community Radio. Join me Saturday at 8. And if you know someone who likes and enjoys this great American classical music, tell them about us. Spread the word. Jazz is alive and well on WTBR 89.7. Thanks for listening.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sondrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, on the PCTV Select app and on channel 1301. Lovely to have you here this morning. Thanks for being here. Kind of a gray, kind of a dreary morning we've got out there this morning. Nothing like the snow we had a couple days ago. We'll continue our conversation here in just a moment with Peter Stasiowski, the Director of Communications at Interprint Inc. And fascinating conversation we're having this morning. First, let's get that weather forecast and find out what the National Weather Service has in store for us today. Here we go.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers. Near steady temperature in the upper 30s. Temperature falling into the upper 30s this afternoon. West wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 25 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 50%. Tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Cold with lows in the mid-20s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. Highs in the upper 30s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Sounds like we got ourselves in a little weather pattern here. Get a day of rain and snow, and then a day of nothing, and then some wind and some rain comes back. And, you know, it's just going to be the way it is for a little while. We'll see how, hopefully in a couple weeks, we get a nice Thanksgiving out of this. That'll be nice if we're not going to get socked in or anything like that. Just a nice, easy travel day for everybody. Everybody has a great Thanksgiving. We're looking forward to that. And of course, a reminder that we've got the WTBR Radiothon coming up a week from this morning. So the Rock Box is open at WTBRFM.com. Please feel free to make your donations in advance now and get us moving along on that fundraiser. It's the one fundraiser we do a year. We don't do multiple day fundraisers. We only do one, but it means a lot to us. So we appreciate your support. All right. Welcome back to the show this morning. Peter Stasiowski, thanks again for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we kind of left off the last half hour talking about Interprint and the move from the PEX Road facility over to Route 41. And since then, it sounds like it was a good move because there have been multiple expansions at that site, right, for many different purposes. Talk about that a little bit.
Right. Well, our operations require some floor space for sure, and we're running out of that space at PEX Road. And we decided to build locally here in Pittsfield off of Route 41. And we found a site. Actually, it was a brownfield. It was an old steel manufacturing facility. El Nasco, I believe, owned it back before we were there. Oh. And so there was already, you know, it was already zoned. It was already a brownfield. Mm-hmm. And it looked like an area that we could build and then further expand if we needed to. And as it turns out, we built a 118-square-foot facility back in 2005 and six, moved in 2006. And that was like a $27 million project back then.
That's a massive footprint, 108,000. Yeah. Square foot, right?
Right. Yeah. Yep. And then since then, we've had one, two, three, four major expansions to that facility since the original construction.
And what drove the expansions? Was it product need? It was things like that, new machines that you needed?
Yeah, predominantly new machines, the ability to store more raw materials and finished goods. We just ran out of floor space and that was a testament to the growth of the business.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so that has been kind of a lifeline in a way to be able to expand when needed, right, in that area.
So exactly. I think we probably were trying to be intelligent in selecting a site that not only served our needs for the current company back in 06, but for potentially future needs. And that particular site would allow for further expansion of the company, and we've taken advantage of that.
Yeah. What are some of the challenges that a company like Interprint has to operate a business in the Berkshires compared to, let's say, you know, a more urban hub like an Albany, a Springfield, a Boston, places like that? Are there things that are different here that are, you know, sort of things that have to be overcome where they're sort of just built in somewhere else?
Well, you mentioned the weather just recently. It was pretty challenging for our second shift to get to work on Tuesday there. It was, you know, whereas in Springfield it was probably just rain or something like that. But, you know, I think we take advantage, as I mentioned earlier, of the families in this county who uncles and fathers and, you know, wives and mothers and aunts have worked in manufacturing. You know, my own family comes from North Adamson. We, you know, my grandfather was a foreman in Bennington. So, like, there was you have that built-in legacy of work, and that really helps the workforce when you have an interview with somebody who's has a family member, they understand that what they're getting into. Mm-hmm. They understand that for hard work they're rewarded, and that's really the people is probably the main beneficial part of us being here in the Berkshires. We're not a transient society. You know, when the holidays come, some towns empty out. I think Berkshires fill up, and that's where we have some stability in our employment, and that means we have some stability in our product.
How about getting employees to work? Is transportation in this area a challenge where other places it might not be?
You mean potholes?
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine things like public transportation and
it can
things
be.
Like that.
It can be.
Potholes are always a problem.
Yeah, the bus line doesn't quite make it down to Interprint, but you know, our folks are pretty coordinated now. If they need a ride, they're chances are someone on their team is heading the same direction. And we have three shifts with a starting point and an ending point. And so there's a lot of opportunity for people to cooperate and get to work.
And with 185 employees, just chat a little bit about the impact to the local economy that a business like Interprint has.
Yeah, we're part of the fabric, you know. I mean, we're not the biggest. We'd like to think that we're the best printers. And it's a situation where our people are dedicated, and they know that they're part of something that's really important to the Berkshire community. They take pride in being Interprint employees. They're happy to wear their hats and T-shirts out and about, and that's for us. That says that we've really made it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start to see in the community, you know, people, you know, we sponsor softball teams and things like that, and you know, we try as much as possible to be a member of the community, even though we're located, you know, way out in the boondocks a little bit. You know, we're very active in the community, the business community, and things like that.
Yeah, I would imagine, and we hear a lot of talk, usually around election time, about supporting companies, supporting manufacturing, how important it is. I wonder, from your perspective, what is the most important thing that state or local governments can do to make sure that a business like Interprint remains successful? What is it that they can help with? Are there things that only they can bring to the table, or is it more like they should just stay out of the way? I mean, what are the best strategies?
Well, you know, tip of my tongue is energy policy. You know, our electricity rates here in Berkshire County are significant in comparison to other parts of the country. You know, we had an opportunity not too long ago to do an expansion, and we looked at other parts, you know, to be closer to some of our customers down south, and the electricity rates they pay down there are a fraction of what we pay here. But we ultimately decided to build here because of some of the advantages of the labor pool that I mentioned. We've got people with long histories, and but it's a challenge with electricity rates. It's a, you know, healthcare is a challenge, a huge cost for us. That that's something that that we've lobbied for in Boston, and you know, the cost of housing, you know, like our starting wage we think is competitive, and it used to be able to support an individual living by himself or herself in a one bedroom apartment. That's not the case anymore.
Wow.
And we've kept up with inflation and actually done better than that, but the cost of rental, the cost of owning a home, has just gone through the roof. And that's an issue that you see all across the state. And that's something that our lawmakers in Boston are hearing from every sector.
Yeah. So I would say the public officials take note, because these are real big issues. And there seem to be the larger umbrella issues, the things that are not a simple, you know, flick a switch and something's better. You know, you're not going to fix the housing crisis with one simple thing. You're not going to fix a health insurance with one simple cure of some kind, right? Those are really big issues, and energy, certainly in the Northeast. And I hear a lot of businesses, you know, even a little TV station like us, we pay tens of thousands of dollars in electricity just to keep this place running, which is one of the reasons why we do fundraisers. But it is really stifling. It can be difficult.
It is, for sure. And we have solar panels on our roof, and we've taken advantage of the various state programs when they were available. And with our manufacturing cousins, like I'll mention Pat Begerwitz and Onyx South Lee, we try to speak as loudly as we can to the lawmakers, representatives, to other trade groups, so that they understand that we are struggling because of some of the policies that are in place.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about just sort of the overall environment of manufacturing in general, right? Because that is something, it's a shrinking portion of the jobs that are available throughout the country. It has a long history, as we talked about here in Berkshire County. So we still have a great tradition of manufacturing, and we still have some, luckily, that are going on. What are the headwinds there in terms of making manufacturing something that America and Berkshire County will continue to do in the future?
Well, we feel pretty strongly that Made in the USA still has some value, and that people understand that when they buy something that's made in the USA and all the components are made here, that they're getting the highest quality in the world. With paychecks being stretched stronger and further and further, you have to, when you buy something, a durable good like our customers' products, it has to last. And it has to perform for the long term. Yeah. And you can buy something that's dirt cheap, and you're not sure where it was made, and hope it lasts. Or you can buy something with, knowing that you're supporting American manufacturing, American workers, and that the product is going to be the best quality that's available.
As a buyer, you have to do some homework on that. You have to do some research, right? And I know from a fact of buying things like radio transmitters. There's actually only one manufacturer now left that is American made for radio transmitters. I learned that when we put WSBR on the air down in Lee, Lenox, and Stockbridge, because we needed a new transmitter. And there were options. There were, European and French options. There were Canadian options. And there was one American manufacturer. That's the one we went with. And it was a bit of a sacrifice, but we did it. And we also had to sort of understand that, right? What the consequences are. And, maybe a lot of people are going this other way for different reasons. So you have to say, okay, A, I have to know that. I have to do some homework, first of all, and then you have to make an informed decision. I don't know if people buying cabinets and flooring and things are making those same decisions or not. What do you think?
I think they're shopping for a number of different things. Yeah. Price is certainly one of them. If it says made in the USA in the box, maybe that's another one. But, maybe most importantly is that our products are not only manufactured here in Pittsfield, here in America, they're also designed here in Pittsfield and here in America. Mm. So we've got an entire materials staff that are scouring lumber yards and rock quarries, other sources of material, to find the best possible image that they can capture it in the highest fidelity, print in the highest resolution. So it's in the style is specifically designed for the American market. Mm. So you might remember, I don't know, 5 or 10 years ago, the whole rustic revolution was upon us, and everything was, galvanized pipe furniture and rough cut wood wall panels and things like that.
Yeah.
We saw that coming about a year and a half before it was here, and we were able to adjust our product base and our designs to reflect that. Just like shortly thereafter, we realized it's just like everything else, that trend is going to pass, and we need to start looking at what's different. If you were to buy an imported product during that time and shortly thereafter, they're going to be a little bit slower to market than we would be, because we're already here. We're already sourcing the best quality materials. Some of our Asian competitors are following us. And our timeline is about 18 months from initial concept to final product.
Interesting.
So if they're following us, it's going to be a year and a half before you start to see a relevant design of a laminate surface and from overseas.
Hmm. So that is, there certainly is competition out there.
Yep.
And it's a matter of keeping up and knowing that I think most people listening can remember the styles of the 1960s and 70s and how quickly those get dated, right? But not everybody redoes their kitchen every 5 years, right, to keep up with style. So in a lot of ways, you need to get something that you like at the moment. And then you say, okay, it's got to last me at least, what, 20 years? Is that a good timeline for things like that, for flooring, for cabinets, for countertops?
Yeah, we like to say it will it'll wear out your eyes before it wears out physically. You know, like a lot of times, you know, you go into houses and you'll see stuff that's well past its prime visually but still functions.
Everything comes around, though, right? Like, you wait long enough, it'll be back in style.
Our first house in Pittsfield had a 1950s knotty pine cabinet set up in there. And that, you know, it was 40 years old at the time and worked great. Yeah. But, you know.
It still worked, right? We had the same thing in my first house. And we ended up doing that kitchen over.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's time for a redo.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You look at all the HGTV shows and you're like, oh, that doesn't look like my cabinets.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And we're in, not everybody needs to refurbish every year, but a significant percentage are ready to every year. And when they're ready to, they'll know that what they're buying, what they're installing. Hopefully our products will be certainly be functional for a generation, but will also be stylistically appropriate for a good period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we need to be close to the cutting edge of the market so that we can provide not only value, but we can provide a design that has legs, you know, that will, people will actually want to look at 10 years from now and not say, oh, I wish, you know, we went with this because now this looks dated. You know, we try very hard to make sure that our customers' products have that look that will have some longevity to them.
And I'll bet a lot of people listening this morning, we're obviously speaking with Peter Stasiowski, is the Director of Communications at Interprint, Inc., and a lot of people listening probably didn't even realize that these kinds of decisions and products and things are being made and the creative decisions are being made right here in Pittsfield. So it's a pretty fascinating story. What is the sort of future outlook for this business? I know that in the past you've done multiple expansions, brought in new equipment, right? You talked about printing on the film instead of the paper. Those were sort of major changes. What does the industry look like, you know, 10 years, 20 years from now? What is it going to be, something that you can still meet with your current facility and current machinery? Are you looking for new things to meet new challenges?
Yeah, so I mean, if you look at our history, it's a history of evolution, and that's the best clue to the future is just continued evolution. Like when I joined the company, there were 5 printing machines, and they were all printing paper. And 19 years later, there's 8 printing machines, and half of them are printing paper, and half of them are printing thermoplastic film. You know, we're also looking at different technologies for printing machines. Our parent company in Germany, the Interprint Germany plant, operates 3 digital printing machines. So they're actually using digital printing heads to print the same decor that we print.
Interesting.
As that technology matures, I know there are plans in place to bring some of that here to Pittsfield as well.
So obviously, new technology is always factoring in. Do you see AI factoring in anywhere in terms of either a benefit, a use, or a challenge, a headwind? Where do you see that fitting in?
Yeah, it's all of the above, Sean. we're trying to leverage the advantages of AI while avoiding the pitfalls of AI.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the video that you mentioned that we created, there is a couple of touches of AI in that. You know, I'll have to show you where they are because you really can't see them. But
I watched the whole video and that did not occur to me that
yeah.
was there.
Well, that's so, the idea is that it's not obvious. You know, AI is being used, you know, throughout our business to really make some of the rote or mundane tasks a little bit more efficient, I'll say. There are some, we have to be very careful about, we can't enter company data into an AI like a ChatGPT or something like that, because that data then becomes part of everybody's, you know, bank of information, and if, you know, if our competitors got were smart enough to figure out how to get that out, they could. And so we have very strict policies about entering proprietary information into there. So a lot of the stuff that we're using AI for is really first generation type content creation for, you know, commentaries and things like that. Occasionally we'll do some image manipulation on there for marketing purposes. All of our decor are 100% Mother Nature inspired, though. There's not a lot of AI going on with that yet. But we don't know. It's a little bit exciting, you know, reminiscent of when the web started or things like that. So
definitely a wild west in a lot of ways where we don't know what we don't know.
Right.
and you want to remember those lessons from the early days of the internet where you know, you didn't know quite what was going on, but you knew you wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, you wanted to, you didn't want to get left behind by it. And at the same time, you're like, yeah, but there's a lot of things that maybe, you know, could be pitfalls, as you mentioned.
For sure. Yeah. That's, you take it day by day and you do the, make the best decisions you can with the information you have.
Yeah. Peter Stasiowski is my guest here this morning from Interprint Inc., and we're talking about the 40th anniversary of the company from the early days of Bill Hines Sr. Sort of breaking away from his original job and had an idea, wanted to move forward with that, and 40 years later, the company's still surviving and thriving here in Pittsfield, employing people and keeping the printing and manufacturing traditions of Berkshire County alive. So a fascinating story in a lot of ways. Peter, what kinds of new products can you imagine an Interprint being involved with at some point? There's so many that, again, most listeners and viewers today wouldn't have thought that that's what was going into these products, unless you know. Are there future things that we'll need that Interprint will be involved with?
Yeah, I mean, our core product to our customers is really creativity. And our customers are the ones who are able to take our creative images and prints and apply them to various different surfaces. You know, for example, one of our customers have a shower system. And, you know, traditionally showers are either natural materials, you know, stone predominantly or tile. But they're able to put a laminated product into a wet area like that. And then once you're able to achieve, you know, that technology to you know, prevent, you know, moisture from getting into the print, then we can print whatever we want for a shower. So there's plenty of innovations happening, and a lot of the innovations are only possible with you know, cooperation between the suppliers to Interprint designers and our customers. It's really, everyone's got to sort of work together when you create something brand new.
Yeah, because you're keeping an eye on the technology that is available from other companies, right? Things that they're working on that maybe don't exist yet. I think you mentioned, you know, the shower stuff. So it's like, okay, you can't do that until another company figures out how to lock that in so that you're not getting water inside.
Exactly,
it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other opportunities out there. And there's plenty of ones that got put on the whiteboard but got erased because there just either wasn't a market need, there wasn't much of a demand for such technologies, or the math didn't work out. Yeah. You know, the real world material was just too cost, you know, the difference was too cost prohibitive for us to really break in the market. But, you know, thankfully we've got a lot of folks, you know, some of our folks have been there 35, 36 years at Interprint. They've seen a lot of ideas come and go, and they're using sort of that built-in memory and education and learning over the years to understand if there's real viability for a new idea or if it's something that we maybe have thought about before and discarded for one reason or another.
And I guess you have the strength also of the other facilities throughout the world, right? It's there's one here and there's one in Germany, and I think there's is it Japan?
Where
are the other ones?
So Interprint started in Arnsberg, Germany in 1969 as the Vrader family began that business there. And up until 1985, that was the entirety of Interprint until Bill Hines Sr. Said, hey, you know, there's an opportunity here for us to start in Pittsfield. Since that time, 8 other locations of Interprint have popped up around the world. So there's really 10 locations in the company. Hmm. And in 2019, that entire entity was bought by Toppan, another company, another printing company headquartered in Tokyo.
Okay.
So we've got printing wherever we look.
And again, you know, the 40th anniversary of establishing the Interprint here in Pittsfield is what we're talking about this morning. And we're kind of wrapping up here, just about to run out of time, Peter. What do the next 40 years look like?
Well, you know, I'm left with a thought of look at where you want to be is important by looking at where you've been. Mm-hmm. And if you think about the trajectory of Interprint since 1985 to 2025, and then you can sort of project that curve of growth for the next 40 years. I won't be here in 40 years, but I can only imagine that if we're able to produce relevant and attractive decor, then for whatever surface emerges in the future, our Interprint product will be part of that future.
There you go. You got the last word. Peter Stasiowski from Interprint Inc., thanks for being here this morning. Great
thanks.
Conversation.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks. All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Just get in my car.